session number 11748, Rule 8.
Gano Ismail Khan, Rule 8.
So, and then suddenly, the men appear from nowhere, waiters, army orderlies of the Indian National Army, ex-Indian Army soldiers, bearing bottles of stout, glasses, and excellent small food, which in Malay language called them makan kichi, means small cocktail food, and Indian sweets and things like that. And as I said before, our reserve broke so much so that, looking slightly foolish, we just started laughing and joking and thumping each other and cracking jokes at Mohan Singh, which was completely against our grain. But we did it. I think the reserves had broken that night. And some of us who got very, very drunk, Captain Dorani and others, Dorani was insisting on rubbing that treacle from an Indian sweet on Mohan Singh's face. And this Captain Dorani was about 6'2" tall and weighed about 250 pounds. By a prisoner of war days, he lost about 20, 30 pounds. And we had to pin him down. He was determined to go and slap the bloody plate of Indian sweets on Mohan Singh's face. Yeah. So, a kind of a good time was had by all of us. And then about midnight, the party broke up and we left. And as I said, we were looking slightly foolish, but by God, we were all not slightly drunk, but very drunk, some of us. When we arrived back into our little separation camp, as they called it, it was within the precincts of the Indian National Army headquarters, that camp. When we arrived, the poor bloody VCOs, who were a brave lot, very loyal lot, but the trouble is that their intellect was slightly limited. You see, out of their circle, their intellect was slightly limited. They were completely shattered with the whole operation that we had been taken away. But when they saw us piling out of this truck and, you know, talking loudly and giggling stupidly, they were amazed. They said, "What happened to you?" So we told them the story. So they began to laugh. They began to laugh. And they are that. Anyhow, stayed the night. Next morning, went peacefully off. But no change in our status or our comforts was apparent. We were given 6 ounces of rice and 2 ounces of dal. Dal is this millet. 2 ounces. And 2 teaspoons of sugar a day, tea. 2 mugs a day, one morning and one in the afternoon. And that's about all our rations. Then we had this Subedar Chiragaram, the Dogra from my battalion, C Company. Poor devil, they were all Brahmins. And when they told us to slop our own things, buckets, that was too much for him. He was only Dogra with us. So I went up to him, I said, Subedar Saab, I said, "I know you don't like it, you'll die if you touch that bloody bucket." So he was sitting on his haunches with his elbows on his knees, and he said, yes, he would. He was a thin man. And the first time when I saw him in the battalion, 1940, his Adam apple rather drew my attention to me. It's moving all the way up and down. So he said, "Yes, but you are doing it." I said, "No, I can do it because I'm not a caste-ridden Hindu, you see? I'm not a Brahmin. Let's have a deal." Or I said, I'll take your slop, your bucket out. And then you wash my clothes. Clothes were very scanty. I had a couple of vests with t-shirts and a couple of shorts, one pair of trousers, 2 shirts. And so in Singapore, in Malaya, humid and hot, we used to go very scantily clad, but still they needed a wash. So he used to wash my clothes, and I used to take his bucket and slop it outside. To the great glee of the Sikh guards, because first they used to jeer at me, calling my valor and my bravery into question, and my self-respect. But later on it became a habit. So, in that I gained the everlasting friendship of poor old Chiragaram. He lived, survived when he came back to India. He became our Subedar Major before he retired. And the Dogra Company, till the time of partition, when they left for India in 1947, September, they considered me as their absolute, their own flesh and blood since those days. My reputation was deep down with them. Then from there, on the 2nd of October morning, Mohan Singh appeared in our camp, addressed those poor VCOs and officers, and said that today is Gandhi's birthday, 2nd of October, and he is going to set us free. Our men are ready to join the INA. He's got an absolute authority. Our VCOs are ready to join. Actually, a few days before that, our VCOs from our battalion came to see us, Subedar Major and us, and they wept. Subedar Major wept too. Who I always considered, today I consider him tall of strength, but in a limited fashion, you see. He did not have the psychological makeup of an officer, you know, to safeguard his bloody, you know, principles. Because they didn't have the intellect to do it, or the psychological makeup. They were very brave in war, very brave and good administration in control of the troops and leadership in a limited way, but not beyond that. So when they said the men are ready, and Subedar Major had tears in his eyes, and the Pathan Subedar seen as Subedar Gulab Deen and things like that. So I said, all right, you go back and do nothing till you hear from us. In the meantime, he sent us free to go back to our camp. Durrani from our battalion pretended he's sick. He's got fever. He was senior, captain, 1936 commission. Abrar Hussain, my course mate, he had dysentery. Tamaya had dysentery before that, and we begged him to join the INA to get him out of fire because he would have died. His weight was left 90 pounds in weight. So we said, you join the INA, look after yourself, we look after ourselves. Abrar had dysentery, and he was evacuated to the hospital. I was the only one to go back to my Tubaluch. So the two or three VCOs from the 14th Punjab, Pathans mostly, we walked to our camp, Salita camp, about 10 miles distance, more than 10 miles. So we walked with our little meager belongings, as Subedar Chiragaram. As we were walking up to this Payalibar village, we sat down upon on a culvert and smelling the Chinese food coming. So I used to say that depression, hunger, poverty has got strange ways to deal with the human mind. I just say the first casualties is your self-respect and your integrity. This I used to repeat to myself, repeat to others, from then up to this day, to keep a hold on my, you know, this thing. Repeat it, and act against, you know, to strengthen my will. As I was thinking this, a female walked past me. I recognized, her bottom seemed a bit familiar, the way she walked, and her hair. So I knew her in Penang, I met her. She was a Chinese, kind of a half Chinese Eurasian she was. Features not very Chinese, features were normal features out there. So I shouted her name, I said, Hester. Suddenly she turned around and said, who's that? In English. I said, it's me, Ismail. By then I'd grown a big moustache for myself. She recognized me. She said, good God, what are you doing here? So I told him, he was there at the camp. She went and said, wait a minute, you're hungry? I said, of course. These three, four JC Viceroy Commission officers with me. And she went and brought ready food. He said, your men are Muslims? I said, yes. So she didn't bring pork. She brought fish and she brought little bits of vegetables and that. And we said, they're gobbling up this food like hell. And these VCOs are laughing like hell. They tell me, they ask me, Pastor, who's she? I said, she's my old girlfriend. You know, I met her in Penang. at a nightclub, and she I went every night to that nightclub. And Peter Campbell knew about her because I told him the story after my last leave in October 41. So we left. And we walked up, and she was living there, so we went to our camp in Sarita camp. When we got there, some NCOs came to see me. Big, huge barrack, wooden frame, and this atap matting on it. So I said, come sit down. What's the story? So what do the VCOs say, that you chaps are ready? They said, no. We are waiting for you chaps. So I said, go back to the men from tonight onwards and start a propaganda that nobody is going to join the army. Nobody, as far as we are concerned. And get your tough NCOs, sit down and squash any man talking like this. Don't start beating up anything like that, but just sit down very deliberately and say, no, no, no. Wait out. As they left, my orderly came and said, VCOs want to come and see you. I said, I'll go and see them there. So I went to there, so all of them were sitting around and there with made makeshift stools and all that. So they were talking to me and I talked to them. I wanted the subject of INA completely. And I said, well, I'm back. He said, where's Captain Durrani? I said, he's got slight fever and Abdurrahman's got dysentery and they've gone, but they'll join us tomorrow, day after tomorrow. We have some doctors with us too in that camp. So the doctor said, you better come with us to cure you completely before you go back to your bloody camp. So I spoke to them and they were a bit nonplussed. I completely ignored their plea when they came to see us, their desperation. Their, not plea, but their desperation. That the men are worried. They've had enough. So I said, no, just quieten down. Sit down, we are back, I'm here. We'll have a good little chat. And as far as we are concerned, no truck with the INA, no breaking down of principles and things like that. Period, no. At that time, something very significant had happened in the British prisoner of war camp, Changi. Piggy Heath, I told you about him before, General Heath. He called the senior most Indian officers, British officers of the Indian Army, and told them that what the Indian troops have gone through is beyond beyond the limits. They have gone through, they have been beaten, they have been tortured, they have been ill-treated, and sooner or later their morale will break. The Gurkhas had not joined the Japanese, but some of them, about 500 of them, 600 of them, had given their word through the NCOs and VCOs, Gurkha officers, to the INA. We had heard that, but I'm not sure. Because Indian National Army people used to tell lies too. Gurkhas were fired at and killed in their camps. Now I talked about mountain artillery troop. They were in their Karanji camp, and later on they were fired at by the INA guards. They came to arrest the Subedar Major, this Parshottam Ram. And the men surrounded him and said, you can't take him over our dead bodies. So the Sea Guard insisted and the men chased them. They disarmed them, kept them there with us. INA headquarters heard about it within a few hours' time. They arrived, truckloads of them, and started shooting at them. Four men lost their limbs, arms and legs, amputations. 16 were killed. And about odd couple of dozens were wounded. And then, again, the 8th Punjab men of the 4th, 8th, and 2nd, 8th Punjab men, 1st, 8th, and 2nd, 8th Punjab men, were also fired at. And they had suffered a lot of casualties. So these words had gone to the British officers. So Piggy Heath said, stop this thing, because sooner or later, they'll break down. When they break down, if they join in small bits and pieces, they will bring more harm to themselves and to the war effort. Then if we tell them, go and join, you have done enough, join, and then when the time comes, break out. You see? This thing, the Indian Army, the British officers, especially from my battalion, Featherstone had joined the camp, saying, come on, John Fritz, they said, no, we don't agree. don't interfere with the men's principles now. They have made their choices. They have made their choices. Let them be as they are. Let them decide for themselves what their course of, future course of action should be. You don't influence it. We oppose this view. Though Piggy's definite orders didn't reach the men, but tickles doubt to the men that Piggy Heath, the British officers, had a conference and they wanted to eat the tooth to join the Japanese. There was the real thing that prompted our VCOs to come to see us tearfully. Let's go. And Monsen came and told us, everything is ready. If your men now resile and don't join, then we'll know that you're the cause of it. So after another day, I called my VCOs again and we sat alone quietly in my little bunk, far away from the men. And I said, what is the true story? They said, we've heard the British officers want us to join. I said, bullshit, no. No British officers will tell me to join. They cannot tell me and you to join. I said it is our battle now. We cannot be caught with a rifle in our hand because nobody will believe us. Where's our individuality? I said, this battalion stood the test. Even our Dogra Hindus didn't join. We are the beacon of light for the prisoners of war. And if we break, the whole lot will break. Even the Gurkhas will break and join the Japanese. So that clinched the matter for us all in 1942, month of October. Then Captain Shah Nawaz raised to a rank of a Brigadier Shah Nawaz, or Colonel he was. From 1st 40 Punjab, he was a Punjabi from Kahuta. He thought all the Punjabi troops should follow him. He came and gave us a lecture and told the Punjabis, berating them, laughing at them, cajoling them, bullying them, that you fought for the British for generations. Our homes are full of our souls, our medals, fighting for the British. Now for a change, let's fight for our own nation, India. India, freedom. Nobody joined, nobody bothered about it. We were all sitting listening to him. Then during this time, when INA was formed after the 15th of February 1942, Mohan Singh was taken to Bangkok by this Major Fujiwara. There with the Indian nationals in exile there in Bangkok, they had also joined, civilian coolies and, all little shopkeepers and businessmen in Thailand. And they joined together, and Mohan Singh had taken a delegation of his own from here, from Singapore. So they had concocted the Bangkok resolutions. Four resolutions. First, we are Indians first and Indians last. No call about that. Second, we must be patriotic and fight for our freedom. No doubt, okay. Third and fourth, like this, is the same, kind of a cockeyed thing. And he came back flapping this paper to us, giving. He used to collect us all, off and on. He used to send for officers to go to and listen to his lectures to the INA. They brought this paper, Bangkok resolutions, and things like that. But we used to, is any questions, we used to ask him questions with traps in it, interfering with his very morale all the time and with judgment. Then he went off to Tokyo and he met Tojo, the Prime Minister, wartime Prime Minister. He had met Tojo and he came back and gave us glorious details of his meeting with Tojo and Tojo's sincerity and honesty about the freedom of India and his backing of the INA and so on and so forth. And we questioned him again. How does he think that his divisions will fight? They want to raise one division, they're raised, and they were in Rangoon, in some part of Burma. Shah Nawaz was given the command of that division. He said, how do you know that the Japs would not use your troops, fragmented troops, as fifth columnists? Don't fire, don't do this, infiltrating Indian units and things like that. No. I will not allow that. We will fight as a division. Once we enter India, Indians will join us automatically. With all our propaganda and our thing, the whole beginning from February 52 till November 42, he began to get ideas. Suddenly we heard also, and they heard also, that Japanese were picking up troops in platoon strength and putting them in the ships and taking them to Burma. In platoons. With NCOs as their platoon leaders. So he had an argument with the Japanese. Major Fujiwara had left the command by then of this intelligence operation of subverting the Indian Army. A lieutenant, a colonel, Iwaguru came, Iwakuru. Or Iwaguru, but I think his name was Iwakuru. I read in this chap's book later on, Fujiwara's. Iwaguru was in charge of the army from June, July 42. So they were sitting among other Japanese, and Mohan Singh objected to their taking men without his permission. So this Iwaguru told him, look, you are sitting here, you are a general, you command the headquarters here. Leave the conduct of war to us, to the Japanese. We know what to do. At this time, the argument developed. It was in November 1942. Argument developed, and he said, you've seen the Japanese. You met the Japanese premier, prime minister. You know what freedom means to Japanese. So Mohan Singh, bloody Sikh in his bloody unguided mind, he turned around and said, this is I've heard then in our camps. He's supposed to have said that he's seen Japan in Japanese. He's seen Japan in Japanese. And that an Indian dog has got more freedom in India under the British than a Jap has got in Japan. He's supposed to have said. On which the Jap generals just blew their tops off. Immediately put him under arrest and sent him out to an island under something, and later on he remained for the rest of the war in an island near Singapore. Nobody knew where he was. So there the INA lost his head, first, in November 1942. Then all these INA chaps, senior chaps than Mohan Singh, like Colonel Bonsley, Colonel Narinjan Singh Gill, and there were a few other Hindu officers, Nagar, he was subsidiary, he had joined the ASC, so on and so forth, they were completely headless. Zaban Kiani, he was made a major general. Shah Nawazan made a major general. They were all sitting in Singapore cooling the heels, while the head was made to disappear to an unknown destination. So much so that our mail arrived for the first time from India. And we heard that our mail is lying in the INA big bungalow where these jokers are living. And downstairs in the basement, while all our mail lying there. So I went to negotiate with him for our mail. So we collected our mail for our camp and brought it. And there were letters for me too, for my brothers and sisters. The Red Cross parcels arrived, 22,000 tons, or 2,200 tons of the Red Cross parcels. We never saw them. INA took them. We got one parcel between 10 officers only. Men were not given it. When men were given it, they gave us our tins of bully beef and things like that, and kept the chocolates and sugar for themselves. They wouldn't eat the meat, you see. So that was the condition. Then, about the end of November, 42, Colonel Bonsley came to our camp. I was walking around there, met him, I said, good evening, sir, how are you? He said, yes, I want to see your chaps. So Hari Badwar, Dargalkar, the chaps I told you about, die hard. Highly intelligent officers, first-rate officers. We were in that our own barrack. Two or three doctors, Ramanaya and Jethi were there. So when we got there, so he told me on the way, I was quietly walking him towards our barrack. He said, you know, he said, how he envied us. How he envied us. Wish to God he had half as much guts as we had. So I said, that the camp is here, come and join us. Don't go out. We keep you here. Bonsley, I told you about before, Garhwal. He was given command of the Garhwal Regiment in the Battle of Singapore. Not before that. So we took him down there, and everybody was wooden face looking at him. Nobody would talk to him. Nobody gave the time of day. So he addressed Dargalkar. Dargalkar was more kind of blimp than the blimp himself. Dargalkar was more blimpish than the worst blimp in the world. He said, "Look here, Bonsai, I don't want to talk to you. I don't know why the hell are you sitting in front of me." Then Hari Badwar told him, "Sir," he said, "I'm amazed that you're coming and seeing us now." And he had a typical Cambridge accent, you see. He got his tripods in Cambridge. Then he joined the army as a trooper later. So he said, "Look, we can't help you. You didn't help us. In what way can we possibly help you now?" So finally, he left the camp. And then one by one, the Japanese took them away. Narinjan Singh Gill went first for playing the double game. Because every one of them secretly claimed for having sabotaged Mohan Singh. Those who claimed, Jeff picked them up. Two or three of them took them up. But the rest was sitting there. When I went to collect our letters, I asked Zaman Kiani. He was first 14 Punjab, like Mohan Singh, and Shah Nawaz, a couple of other junior officers, one Captain Dara. So I said, "What do you chaps have decided now? What are you going to do?" Quiet. No answer. One young captain called Inayat Hassan turned around to me and said, "No, you see, they can't go back now. They've committed themselves too much in this Indian National Army." So I left them, picked up my mail and came away. Back to my camp. So I announced to them, I said, "Those chaps are sold out. They can't get out." December went, 42. 43 came. 43, July came. Then a man appeared on the horizon in the shape of Subhas Chandra Bose. Heard about him?
Yes, indeed.
Subhas Chandra Bose appeared in brown polo boots, beautifully cut polo boots, khaki breeches, khaki drill, breeches, bush shirt, and with a forage cap on his head. He was a very good-looking Bengali. And he came striding out into Singapore and reorganized the Indian National Army and Free Indian Government in Singapore. Traveled up and down to Tokyo, traveled up and down to Bangkok and reorganized. His story was that he was in the Indian Civil Service, resigned his service and joined the Indian National Congress, became the president of Indian National Congress. Then he was in jail during the 1942-41 agitation. And he escaped from jail, from India, went to frontier to Afghanistan, Afghanistan to Russia, before Russia came into the war. And from there he found his way into Germany. And there he made life miserable for Hitler. He was advocating that you can defeat the British by creating a thing in India. All the prisoners of war that you are capturing in this ding-dong battle in Libya and Egypt and that and the coast, give them to him, he'd make them into an Indian National Army. But Hitler would not give him much lift. So when this Singapore surrender took place, they found an occasion to get rid of him. So they sent him by submarine to Tokyo. From there, Tojo sent him down. And he organized the Indian Free Indian Government in Singapore and the Indian National Army. They were ready made for him in the Indian National Army. So he came.